Nick Offerman. Suck it. Sox are gonna do it over your Cubs, so get over it.
Both teams are terrible this year, though.
Suck it, though. The Sox are gonna get them.
Welcome to the Pinstripe LA podcast, where we're feeling pretty good because the Yankees are now winning again. They had lost a couple games in a row to the Pirates and Cubs, and looked like they might lose a third in the row, but they rallied, and they won the game, and now they've won five of the last seven. Sounds a lot better to say than having lost three in a row. Andrew Mearns joined here by Matt Provenzano and Matt Ferencik. Did I get it right that time?
Yeah, correct.
I'm probably going to be asking this, like, every time. Because I realized that, like, I think two podcasts ago, I was like, sorry, I messed it up, and now that I got it right. And then on the very next podcast, I'm like, nope.
Oh, I didn't even notice if you did.
Well, yeah, it happened, I think. Anyway, what do you guys think of the crazy game today?
I ate dinner and came back and it was still happening.
I left work when it was in the top of the 10th inning, and I was recapping the game. I was like, well, hopefully it goes on a little bit longer so I don't have to finish the recap on my phone. And I got back and they were in like the bottom of the 12th, so...
Yeah, I decided to actually, I was actually watching a movie in the middle of the game because they were losing, and I was like, they'll probably lose this game. They don't look like they're going to win this. They're pretty much handing the Cubs
the
game.
Oh, yeah, they look lifeless.
And then, yeah, so I just figured, I'll just watch a movie, and they'll just hand the Cubs the game, and it'll be whatever. Like, it's whatever. And then I realized, then I was like, oh, it's the top of the ninth inning. So I checked my phone, and then I realized that they tied it, and then I was like, I guess I'll watch it now. So I finished the movie, and then I watched basically still over an hour and a half of baseball anyway, even though I didn't watch, like, eight innings.
Too bad you missed the ninth inning of weird baseball that allowed the Yankees to tie the game.
Yeah, that was incredibly strange, and I'm convinced that the Cubs just gave the Yankees that game, because they should have had that game, they should have won that game. There's really no reason why... Yeah, and Ichiro's not a hero. He basically grounded out into a double play, essentially. And that game should have clearly been over. But thanks, Cubs. We'll take it. And that's why I guess these are the types of games that you have to win.
Because
you're playing against a team that's incredibly poor.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I give the Yankees credit for loading the bases with no one out and actually capitalizing. I think since Ichiro's fast and the ball wasn't hit too hard, he might have beaten it out. But still, they would have had to bring home the tying run from third, and I don't entirely trust them to do that, so yeah, I definitely think a lot of that falls on the Cubs for just Cubsing it up.
Yep.
Yeah, but at the same time, I give credit to the Yankees' bullpen for holding it together for four innings, because I did not think that they would be able to hold steady for four innings, especially when you had Lord Preston Claiborne and Matt Daly pitching.
The artistic stylings of Matt Daly and Preston Claiborne.
Yeah, so I wasn't incredibly optimistic, but once Jose Veras was pitching for the Cubs, I'm like, all right, we got this.
Yeah, all in all, I think the bullpen threw like 8 2/3 scoreless innings.
Yeah,
but between
that's correct.
Between like Betances doing his Betances thing. Oh, and actually, he did something really important in that game too, because when Whitley left in the fifth inning, there were some runners on, and Dellen did his Dellen thing and stranded them, thanks to Anthony Rizzo swinging through two pitches that hit him.
Which he did yesterday as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal with that guy is.
And Teixeira did it Sunday. It's like the call you never see, and it happens like four times in a couple days.
So weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
But yeah, Betances rang his strikeout total up to 45 in like 26 innings. And he's tied with Jared Weaver and Jose Quintana now. Quintana. But
yeah, and I believe his K's per nine is around 15.5, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe that's what I calculated after the game. But Betances was great. Warren, okay, actually now I think about it, it wasn't 8 2/3 scoreless, because Warren gave up an insurance run for the Cubs when they
got a
leadoff triple and scored on a squeeze. And but other than that, he pitched, I think, an inning and 2/3 or something like that. Then
Then
they patched up the rest of the game with Claiborne, Daly, Thornton, Aceves, I think, was even made an appearance, and it was just like, what? How are you guys actually pitching decently? I think the Cubs were also getting into and out of their own out of their own offense too, because they're stranding runners. But
yeah, I find Joe Girardi's strategy really interesting and kind of weird at the same time, that he just decides, I'll just burn through my whole roster. I think he used like 21 or 22 of the 25 men on the roster.
Yeah, I think that.
I think he only had like three pitchers left, and like one of them was like, and like most of them were like, I think they were starters were the only ones left.
Yeah, he told David Phelps to go put his spikes on just in case they needed him, which would have made, you know, tomorrow's game interesting. Or I guess today's game, because it's going to be posted on Thursday. Because Phelps is supposed to start against Chris Sale. Gulp.
Dean Anna recalled the start.
Yes, Dean Anna, pinch starter.
It's weird that he still saves Robertson for the very end and doesn't wait until it's like the most crucial moment in the game.
Yeah, that seems to be a recurring problem with like basically every baseball manager. It's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times where you'd want Robertson to be in there because it's the highest leverage, and instead he tries to save him for the last inning where they have the lead.
Yeah, that
is a problem in general.
It's making me very nervous when we're like, all right, Matt Daly and Preston Claiborne, Matt Thornton, it's up to you guys.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I think I saw the 21 players they used was the most that they had ever used in a non-September game since, like, 1970.
But I guess the theory is for Joe Girardi that if you use so many players, no one really gets strung out.
Right.
You're not using a guy. I mean, back in the 70s, it was like, all right, you know, Sparky Lyle, Goose Gossage, you're just going to pitch, like, six innings. So I guess that's kind of, they don't want to blow anyone's arm out. So everyone's going to pitch like an inning and a third so that you don't blow out the bullpen for the following day, I guess. Because someone's going to be available tomorrow or a Thursday.
Yeah, I think Phelps is going to go nine.
against Chris Sale.
Hey, he's not pitching. He's not facing Chris Sale as a batter. No, he's probably going to need some help. I guess Aceves didn't work that much today, but, you know, I'm not comforted by Aceves being the one reliever.
Yeah.
I'm so
sure we don't have to use him.
I was saying after the game that I would just as soon send him into the sun and just get a fresh arm for that day.
Yeah, that'd be fine with me.
So now that there are injuries to Pineda, who I guess looks like he's starting to come back by, looks like early to mid-June, and now CC Sabathia we've learned that he's not going to be back until at least July. There's this problem that they're having in the rotation where Chase Whitley and Phelps are really only going about five
and
innings.
And Vidal Nuno as well.
So, and Vidal Nuno. So you have really three starters only averaging about five innings pitch per start. What do you think the strategy is for Joe Girardi? Is it something like that, where he just tries to not string out any one particular relief pitcher? Or should he try to find a long man to relieve on in those situations?
I think that it seems like he's using Warren and Betances as like caddies for them, basically. And he's trying to get them stretched out a little bit more, but they're just not good enough pitchers, I think, to actually get them stretched out. Maybe it's a little too early to say on Whitley, but Whitley was also like a reliever for his entire minor league career until just like last year.
Yeah.
So, I don't see any help on the horizon coming for the starting rotation until Pineda comes back, you know, provided his rehab and stuff goes fine. So, it seems like they're just going to have to make do with using a lot of Warren and Betances, which, I mean, I guess there's not really much that Girardi can do otherwise. He can try to limit the innings, and he just has to cross his fingers and hope that Kuroda and Tanaka can give him distance in their starts, but other than that, I mean, it's going to be a struggle getting someone to get through those sixth and seventh innings. And it doesn't help that Sean Kelly's on the disabled list, too.
Yeah, that's right. So now it's confirmed CC Sabathia's out until at least July. And basically, it's Tanaka, Kuroda, and everybody else. Hal Steinbrenner recently made the statement that the Yankees were willing to take on more salary for a starting pitcher. Do you think that this outing against the Cubs was the Yankees scouting Hamill and Samardzija, or do you think they even have the pieces to trade for those guys? Because I would assume that there are going to be teams that are going to have more prospects that can trade for either one of them.
That would be my hunch as well. I think they're probably going to trade starter at some point. It might end up being a guy like Hamill, who doesn't really particularly impress me since he got clobbered last year in the AL East. But they need, even if Maeda comes back and he's totally healthy the rest of the season, and even if somehow CeCe Sabathia comes back and is totally healthy the rest of the season, they're not getting Ivan Nova back. So unless you want to be relying on one of Nuno, Phelps, or Whitley for a bunch of starts, then you're probably going to have to make a trade. And we don't know entirely how much we can trust CeCe Sabathia's degenerative knee or Pineda, since, you know, those four starts he made in April were his only four starts professionally since 2011.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I guess the next question is, what do you think the Yankees are willing to give up for a legit starting pitcher? Do you think they try to get a marginal guy who they don't necessarily have to give as much up for? Or do you think they just pull a Steinbrenner and just completely give away like a Sanchez for somebody of value?
It's hard to say because obviously we have no idea how much the Yankees personally value any of these guys. I think in the deal, I don't think anyone's untouchable. I mean, you know,
no one's ever untouchable. That's the rule, right? You know? Everyone.
A few years ago, they were willing to give away Jesus Montero, and who is like one of the best prospects in baseball at the time, and another couple of minor league pieces just for half a season of Cliff Lee. I mean, granted, I don't think there's anyone like Cliff Lee on the market, like 2010 Cliff Lee on the market right now. But I don't think that they view anyone as untouchable. I'm sure they would unload Sanchez in the right deal. I'm sure they would unload any of these guys that are doing really well in the right deal.
Yeah. So the Cliff Lee one I find the most interesting in terms of trading prospects, because Cliff Lee, if you get a year and a half of Cliff Lee, or it's really 2.5 because he has to, if he vests his option, it'll be really 2.5 years. I guess the Yankees would have to weigh what is the future value of Gary Sanchez or someone of that comparable quality. Is Gary Sanchez going to produce a similar amount of WAR in his career that you could get out of 2.5 years of Cliff Lee? Because Cliff Lee is going to produce about, I don't know, I'd say 7 or 8 WAR in the next 2.5 years you could make, or possibly more. Which, do you really? I mean, there are so many top prospects who don't come close to that production. So that's definitely a risk they could take.
Yeah, I just don't see. Well, first of all, Cliff Lee has his old arm strain going on right now. And
true.
I don't want to go anywhere near that. And I also don't think that the Phillies would be willing to sell him yet. I mean, they're not in a division that's like getting. I don't think they're a good team. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team at all. But, I mean, they're in a division that where, like the AL East, where no one's running away. So they really have no reason to give him up just yet. And also, again, with the arm thing, I feel really uneasy about trading for Cliff Lee.
Yeah.
Plus, I just don't like him.
Yeah. I mean, that would make the only real targets the Cubs. And you could imagine you're going to have teams like the Red Sox, the Tigers, maybe not the Tigers, but teams like the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, the Orioles are going to be all over those guys. And you can tell the Red Sox whatever price the Yankees can have in prospects, the Red Sox can double.
Yes.
Yep.
So and the Red Sox are certainly going through their own rotation problems with DuPont left with an injury yesterday. Buchholz is awful.
Yeah.
So.
So here's, I guess, my opinion would be that the Yankees may pursue a starting pitcher who isn't viewed in the same way that Samardzija or Hamill is, or maybe it's Hamill, somewhat a guy who's a little bit under the radar, because I think that where the Yankees have a strength in a similar vein that the Tigers do is that they're very good at major league scouting. They can find guys who aren't necessarily valued. They could be playing on a team every day, and they may not be as valued to that team as the Yankees may see that value. Sort of like when the Yankees picked up Nick Swisher, a guy who really was, he was kind of falling out of favor with, I believe it was the White Sox, and he sort of turned his career around with the Yankees. So yeah. I think the Yankees have a good job major league scouting-wise, and maybe they'll find a starting pitcher who you don't really hear about, or maybe is in the back end of a rotation, and they may be able to swap some pieces for him. And maybe they see something that team doesn't. that maybe fits their park or fits their profile. But you won't really know until it gets further into June or July, maybe.
Yeah, even Cashman himself has said there's not really much out there right now.
Yeah, Hendricks.
No, no. And teams really have to fall out of it a little bit too.
Yeah, and yeah. What were you saying, Matt Perenchik?
No, I was just saying it's far too early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I think Yankees are probably just going to have to tough it out with these five-inning starters right now. Hopefully they can give them a little bit more length. I think Phelps might have gone six last time, and he looked pretty – he started against the Mets, didn't he? And he looked pretty decent.
No, he actually had a pretty, like, tough start.
No, Pirates.
Yeah, it was against the Pirates. It was when they won 4-3, I believe. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
He struggled.
Maybe Sunday. I'm thinking of the start before then.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of he struggled, but he only he didn't really, in terms of runs allowed, didn't do that badly. But you could tell he was struggling. He didn't have his best stuff. His curveball command was completely off. His fastball command was off as well. So like he was really struggling. But he has a little bit of grit, I guess. His makeup is very good, and I think that's really what the Yankees like about him, is that he has a competitive nature that sort of keeps him in the game. While certain starting pitchers, if they get knocked around a little bit or they struggle, they just kind of slip out of it.
Yeah.
And I think he does a pretty good job of staying in the game as long as possible.
Yeah, I saw recently that
yeah, he stranded a ton of guys that game.
Yeah. And I saw recently that one of the reasons the Yankees selected him when they drafted him, they were scouting another Notre Dame person at the time, but they were really impressed by his fortitude. That's one of the reasons why they took Phelps. And I think it was like the 14th round of 2008 or something like that.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, that's exactly why they signed him. And it just goes to show that, you know, makeup still makes a large part of what makes a player. Because if you look at him at face value, David Phelps is not an overpowering pitcher.
No, and he only has the one really good pitch.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. You could say one plus pitch, which I don't even know if that pitch was developed in college. So if he didn't really have that as a fully developed pitch, you'd have to make an argument that pitch would develop, that his body would develop, and that he would basically pitch his way onto a team with his fortitude. Because most of his stuff is maybe, you know, 50 grade stuff, 45 grade stuff, but he's able to kind of make it work, which, you know, good job by the Yankees amateur scouting, because that's a pretty good pickup, because their pitching staff would be in a complete disarray if he was not at least there.
Yeah.
I think they would also be in dire straits if they didn't have Dellin Betances and Adam Warren pitching pretty terrific.
I agree.
I mean, it's really nice having relievers who can go, you know, they're not restricted to one inning.
Yeah, so I really like not only the relievers themselves, but just how the team constructs the relief pitching. The Yankees are notorious for not spending. I mean, other than Mariano Rivera, who's like a legacy player, they don't spend an excessive amount of money on relievers, barring, you know, the Rafael Soriano deal.
Yeah, I think, but in general, I think Cashman learned his lesson with Pedro Feliciano, Damaso Marte, Kyle Farnsworth, all these old contracts that were doled out to relievers. And ever since then, I mean, the deal they gave to Matt Thornton was 3 years, but I think it was only like $9 million or something.
Yeah, that's right. So they don't really hand out large deals to relievers, and they kind of just shake it out and see how it works, and maybe they'll convert, like someone like Warren, and maybe a starter, convert him to a reliever, and convert Betances to a reliever. So they kind of just do this piecework thing, because really, relieving is just maximizing like a couple of wins, or three or four wins tops. So you don't really need to spend more than, you know, $15 million total on it, or, you know, in theory. So, you know, that I have to say that it's really a good construction, because once you have a lead, I think it's pretty safe that you have Warren or Betances, and then Warren or Betances, and then you pretty much just have, and then Robertson or Kelly when he gets back. So it's a pretty strong core of about four.
The core four.
Core four relievers. Maybe they'll start the dynasty of the next 10 years. It'll just be like four relievers, and they'll just each pitch like two innings every single day.
Oh man! Then David Phelps will be like the guy on the outside, being like, "Hey."
Yeah. So I actually, speaking of relievers, David Robertson. You know, before the season started, there was obviously that talk about David Robertson not being the quote-unquote proven closer, and now you see guys like Jim Johnson and Graham Balfour and Fernando Rodney and Joe Nathan struggle, and they're supposedly proven closers. I read on Twitter, and then I looked up in Baseball Reference, over the last 4 years, in 205 and a third innings pitched, Robertson has a 1.88 ERA, 1.08 whip, 12 Ks per nine, 3.2 walks per nine, 0.5 home runs per nine, and a triple slash line of 200, 276, 289.
Yeah, he's good at this pitching thing.
So it's nice to have him pitching in the ninth inning because I'm starting to feel, like, comfortable when he pitches. That Mariano Rivera feeling of, oh, okay, game's just about over. So I think that's a nice thing. So although they're struggling the first five innings, at least 6 through 9, I feel pretty comfortable.
Yep. I would feel more comfortable in the team if a lot of their hitters were, you know, hitting. Because until they rallied late, pretty much the offense was just, over the past 2 days, was Brett Gardner and Mark Teixeira, and everyone else. Jacoby Ellsbury is in an awful slump. Where I think he did get a hit in his last at bat tonight or today, but I think that made him like 6 for 54 and then 2 for his last 28. So I miss April Ellsbury. He needs to come back. And
he's been pretty.
Yeah, and Brian McCann is still struggling too.
But even this late rally had little to do with the Yankees.
Well, yeah, the go-ahead run, even in the 13th, scored on a wild pitch from our old buddy Jose Veras.
Well, it's Mark Teixeira, Brett Gardner, and also Yenher Vizcalarte, who continues to hit. And I think that's worthy of note that I read an article today from J.J. Cooper, and he was also saying that absolutely nobody expected this. Zero people. No. I don't even know if the Yankees expected it. And his belief was that he'll regress because he wasn't even the best hitter on Round Rock Express, that's what it was, So he wasn't even the best hitter on the Round Rock Express. How could he be the second best hitter on the Yankees? But if you look at his BABIP has regressed almost exactly to what his, maybe like 30 points off of what it was in the minors. So he's regressed. You know, not hard, but he's gone down from hitting 160 WRC plus to like 141.
Oh no.
And it's unbelievable that if he meets the projections, really just of playing time, Steamer projection says he'll have a 105 WRC plus after the season's over and a WAR of 2.3 or 2.4 depending on the projection system. So this guy, who nobody knew anything about, was on nobody's radar, is really a 2.5 win possibly player just sitting in the Round Rock Express. I find that kind of incredible that he was just sitting there and he was worth like what people were willing to pay Steven. You know, Steven Drew just got $10 million, who's a similar, I guess, production player over the same time, and teams are willing to pay at least $7 million a win or so. So a guy who could be worth theoretically about $15 to $20 million was just signed for basically nothing.
Yep. Solarte has been pretty ridiculous. And I am also in the camp of like, you know, I've given up trying to expect the shoe to drop because, you know, it's just, if you keep hoping for that, then you're not going to derive any joy from this. And this is just really entertaining to watch. This guy who is signed for, I think, like $100,000 or something like that in January. Just an afterthought. I remember I put him in a post, I think, about when the Yankees signed Scott Sizemore, and then it was just like, oh, and they also signed some guy named Yenher Vizcalarte. I'm like, that's a great name. It's bad he probably won't be relevant. And then all of a sudden, you know, he gets to spring training, and he's hitting the tar out of the ball, and then he makes the roster, and he's been as terrific as he has so far. And as you said, if he's even only like average the rest of the season, I'm sure he's going to regress a little bit, but if he even just is average, then the Yankees will have a terrific player just as a corner infielder. And they never really expected that after like losing.
They basically got Steven Drew for nothing, which is unbelievable to really think about. I think the most interesting part about the signing of Solarte is the fact that they actually offered him a lot of money for somebody who was a that quality player, and other teams sort of backed off on him because the Yankees, I think, said they would pay him $22,000 a month to play in AAA. And other teams were like, no, I'm not going to pay him $22,000 a month just to play in AAA. It's not worth it. And the Yankees sort of had an upper hand in the signing because they were like, no, I think the scouts saw something. So they were willing to pay him whatever that was, however much that is a year. That's like almost $200,000 a year for a minor league player. So that's a way that the Yankees can exercise the amount of money they have in a very small scale way.
Yeah.
But that's unbelievable that he exists, that he's a player. I'm waiting for the jersey to come out.
I'm sure it will.
No, I'll offer someone who basically we were hoping to make the team because he wasn't Eduardo Nunez.
it's a giant step up from like team not Nunez to, oh my God, this guy's actually good.
And the funniest thing is, if you really, it's 159 plate appearances of him playing well, but if you really think about it, it's really like he's been playing well since the end of, like, since the beginning of March.
Right.
He's been hitting incredibly well since spring training, and he hasn't cooled off really. He's had, like, two mini slumps, but he's been hitting pretty much, like, crazy for now almost 3 months.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, you compare, obviously, early on in April, you see a lot of weird small sample size stuff. Like, Chris Colabello on the Twins is, like, leading the league and I think, hitting an RBI. And he's just fallen precipitously since then. He's now, like, down to, like, an 80 WRC plus or something, and he's -1 WAR or something. So it's, like, I wasn't expecting a fall like that from Solarte, but I was expecting them to, like, come back to earth a little bit. But he just hasn't. And
I think the comment that J.J. Cooper said in his article was, the only thing that's worth remembering is that this time in 2012, Cubs first baseman Brian LeHair was hitting .323, .422, .637. He then hit .225 the rest of the season and has not played in the big leagues since. So there is always the possibility that he just falls off the cliff. Because some could say, you know, there's a reason why he never made the majors. That's an argument. But in the same token, teams aren't infallible. The market isn't perfect. You know, they're going to be guys who you undervalue. It's just inherent. There are market deficiencies. So in theory, there are other players like him who exist who you just don't notice.
Right. I heard something that last year he was on the Rangers AAA affiliate, and they had signed Manny Ramirez at one point, and he was in the minors trying to get his way up to the majors. That never happened. But he was working with Solarte on his swing down there, so I don't know if maybe something happened with them or where they were working together and something clicked maybe, but I don't know if that's anything to like put too much credence in, but I think it's an interesting story and probably makes a lot of sense because, you know, if you're going to learn from someone, Manny Ramirez isn't a bad person to learn how to hit from.
Yeah, it's just the only thing is that he had two like very meh years.
Oh yeah,
in you know like completely uninspiring. That's why it's so interesting is that they saw whatever they saw sheerly based on tools, and nothing based on his minor league stats, which is interesting. So whatever his swing did, it didn't really help him, unless it was at. You could look, maybe it was at some point. When was this last year?
Yeah, like I think Manny had signed with the Rangers in like July or something like that.
Yeah, maybe if you compare his first half to his second half minor league numbers, maybe there's a marked difference. That's possible.
But
and it really maybe and the Yankees scouted in the second half of the year after he had made his swing adjustment. That's certainly possible. But his overall season numbers were worse in 2013 than they were in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
And he's only had two above average offensive years, and they were both one was in Double A and one was in High A with the Twins. And he's been pretty dreadful offensively. For a number of years, almost seven at this point.
Right. Well, baseball does weird things sometimes. So, I mean, we know when expected, like,
can't predict baseball.
Exactly, Sue.
Susan.
But, like, no one expected Jose Bautista to like, become ultra home run hitter. No one expected Edwin Encarnacion to finally shake, like, the E5 label and actually become an awesome hitter. And so baseball's always full of these weird stories. Yeah. I don't really know if Solarte is going to turn out like that, but I'm enjoying it while it lasts.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue this does, you know, work out. It's one of the best minor league signings you've really ever heard of, because they always, like, the trite saying is, well, you know, it's a low-risk signing and a high reward, or whatever that means, but you never really see the reward. Maybe find, like, $15 million of value just, like, laying around. Usually maybe it's, like, a handful, it's, like, $100,000 you make off the guy. But something like this is really, I guess you could say, the extreme case. And you may never see it again.
Yeah, they've already experienced the high reward.
Yeah, he's already made them, I'd say, something like $10 million in value he's created, really. And something that Stephen Drew would have provided over the course of a whole season, and they would have had to pay that.
Right. And Jervis Solarte is a pretty crazy dude. May
yeah.
his improbability continue forever.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh, we should probably talk about the injuries that have been going on.
Yeah.
Even beyond, so we touched on the pitching injuries a little bit. We don't know when exactly CeCe Sabathia is coming back, possibly mid-July, but you know, it's a degenerative knee thing, and so it could, Yankees have to treat it very carefully. So, hopefully it'll be All-Star break, but we don't know when. Hopefully Pineda comes back in mid-June, like he seems he will, but again, you know, you're working with the guy whose shoulder is with her for years, so they're going to have to take it carefully with him as well. Carlos Beltran has that weird bone spur thing in his elbow where he's going to try to play through it, but, you know, he might end up needing surgery, though, and miss most of the year.
Yeah, so, and I think the Carlos Beltran one is a huge blow, because an offense that was so deprived last year, and this is a guy who can hit from both sides of the plate, doesn't really play great defense, but this is a middle-of-the-order bat the Yankees really needed.
With power.
And
yeah.
With power, and you're really just replacing him with part-time Ichiro, Soriano, who's been pretty dreadful, and Zoilo Almonte. So the replacements aren't totally inspiring, although Ichiro's been playing pretty well, but he's still, like, you still have to remember last year, because last year was not fun, having him play every day.
No. As you mentioned, Soriano has been pretty cold lately. He needs to get on one of those hot streaks like he was in, I think, like mid to late April when he hit 6 home runs. And
yeah, he's basically striking himself out at this point.
God, like that one strikeout in extra innings was just classic Soriano.
I mean, he just swings three. I mean, I was following it on my phone and just said, swinging strike, swinging strike, swinging strike.
Like, well, see ya. But yeah, that could be a very damaging loss if. I mean, well, it's already showing problems because the Yankees' offense without Carlos Beltran's bat in the lineup is just not quite the same. It doesn't help that Ellsbury has been slumping. Jeter's been up and down. What else we got? Oh, McCann's, I think I mentioned before, but McCann has just not looked good at all yet. I mean, he's got a couple dingers, but he's not walking as much as he did last year.
Yeah, I think he'll be better. I mean, also his BABIP was like 220.
Yeah, he's
so
due for some.
I think partially.
He's due for some positive.
He's going to break out. I think as the weather gets a little bit warmer and the team starts to get, you know, warmed into the season, I think McCann's going to have a breakout like month. I think he's due for it. I mean, he still has 6 home runs, so you could see he, like, the power's there. His isolated power is still about 145. I think it's just some bad luck. He's also transitioning, which is, you know, he's transitioned to a brand new team in a brand new city. I think that's part of it. And also he's pitch framing incredibly well. So even if he hits like garbage, he still is a good pitch framer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he just needs to build up some rage from like some unwritten rule violation or something. And then
there needs to be a fight. There needs to be some fight. Jose Fernandez needs to come, even with his UCL torn, he needs to just hit a home run.
Mm-hmm. And be like, oh,
and just get him riled up.
Oh man!
Although during the Milwaukee series, the ESPN broadcast talked about how he like patched things up with Carlos Gomez, so maybe what's his name? Did I say the right name?
Yeah, Carlos.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I'll need to make a quick note. Praise Tanaka's complete game shutout of the Mets.
Yes, let's just take a moment to say we love Tanaka, we appreciate Tanaka, Tanaka's amazing. Tanaka is one of the best rookie pitchers the Yankees have had in a very, very long time. And it's And I think I don't remember the last time that I have to watch him. Like, I have to watch a Yankee pitch. I don't remember the last time I was like, I need to watch him pitch.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a pretty great feeling. Oh, yep. Even when he, like, he finally lost and he's getting to the Cubs the other day. And that was a bit of a bummer. And it was kind of wild leaving pitches up. But I thought he pitched decent enough to win the game, I thought. But the offense was just doing nothing against Jason Hamill, so.
And the defense was absolutely horrendous. God. I think one of those runs was like pass a diving Jeter.
Of course.
Which is the theme of his retirement season.
Yep. Also, 4 final at-bat ovations in a row at Wrigley.
I think that one team should get, as a retirement gift, should get a pasta diving Jeter.
They just get him like an unlimited supply of, like, I don't know,
Olive Garden gift certificate.
Yes. Or just a whole bunch of Walmart brand pasta.
I was thinking of the thing from Seinfeld with Fusilli Jerry, and like he makes Jerry made out of Fusilli. So I was thinking of like pasta diving Jeter, and it's like a sculpture of him like diving and missing a ball, but he's like made out of pasta.
Oh boy. Well, that's the Yankees. They've been playing pretty well, so now we can move on to. Well, do you want to do the tweet bag or the game first?
We can do the tweet bag.
All right.
Yeah.
So, got some questions in the tweet bag on the site. Okay, so first question from Yankee Raven. If Rob Refsnyder does well enough in the minors in 2014 to earn the second base job in 2015, could you then imagine Yennefer Solarte as the starting shortstop and Rob Refsnyder as the starting second baseman in 2015 as the young and not-so-expensive options there while the Yankees spend the big monies elsewhere, a.k.a. pitching, like Max Scherzer?
That's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, that's a lot of ifs. I don't care how well Rob Refsnyder hits in 2014. The Yankees aren't going to give him the 2015 starting second base job. That's just not what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, his defense. Not only has he, I mean, he's hitting okay, but his defense has been pretty bad.
Yeah, and I think I've heard that he's been playing a little bit better at second base, but the Yankees don't operate that way. They're probably going to go out and sign someone to play second base or find some other option other than giving it to a rookie like Rob Refsnyder. I think there might be a chance where, like, if Refsnyder does, in this hypothetical scenario, hit well enough to earn promotions to AAA and then make himself worthy of a possible call-up to the majors, then you might see him at second base maybe midway in 2015, but I don't think there's any scenario where he'll end up as the starter at second base next year. That's just...
Yeah. I don't think they're going to go in. They're not going to go into the season without a plan, like a back. Because coming into the season, they had it said that Johnson was basically going to start every day at third, and Roberts was going to start every day at second. So even if those other guys didn't pan out, they had two guys they were planning on starting at those positions. And I think that next year will be the same thing. They will sign someone to start at second base and third base, you know, whatever happens with A-Rod or whatever. But they're going to have a plan as to what the infield is going to be regardless. And if Rob Refsnyder plays himself onto the roster, he would merely replace whoever they had signed to put it in that place or trade whoever that is.
Right. And obviously Solarte has a full half season to prove that he's the real deal and someone that can be a part of the future plans.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the nice things about Solarte is that since he's versatile in the infield, I mean, he's not a superb defender by any means, but he can play a few different positions. So even if, I've said before that I don't think A-Rod's coming back to the Yankees, but if A-Rod does indeed come back to the Yankees and play third base, then he can just shift Solarte over to play second base.
Yeah, really just a question of who plays at shortstop, and I think they'll probably sign somebody or trade for somebody because they're not going to leave shortstop.
They'll sign Steven Drew now that, you know, he wouldn't be attached to any draft pick compensation in the offseason.
Yeah, that's possible. Maybe on a one-year deal or something like that. That's always possible.
I will say that I don't think that infield situation will affect the Yankees' pursuit of a starting pitcher. I think they're going to do that regardless. I don't know that they'll go after. They'll go after Scherzer or one of the other names. It's going to cost a ton of money. I could see them going after like a slightly lesser starting option, but we'll see.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Next question. Who is most likely to be in the Yankees' rotation in 2015? Phelps, Warren, Scherzer, or Lester? How has your answer changed since the first two times I asked this question, particularly given the concerns about CeCe's knee? That is, of course, from a long-time listener. My answer is still Phelps.
yeah, I'm going to say Phelps.
Phelps.
Yeah.
To touch on the other things we were talking about before, that there are other guys who are going to be free, I mean, going to be free agents, there are a few guys to look out for. Also, there's the in 2015, there will be no Hiroki Kuroda.
There might be. I mean,
he'll probably either retire or go to Japan. He doesn't really plan on pitching. But there are still a number of lesser pitchers, maybe a tier below someone of the Lester quality, but still pretty good. You can get most of that value for a fraction of the price. Someone like a Masterson, a McCarthy, Brandon McCarthy, this Francisco Liriano, Colby Lewis, someone like that, I think is someone who the Yankees may target.
Yep.
I personally would favor McCarthy or Masterson out of all of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think of the guys that LTL mentioned, I think problem. I just don't see them signing a Scherzer or a Lester. That seems.
No, I really don't.
Yeah. It seems like they made
it's a lot.
It seems
of money.
Like they made their big splash in contracts last offseason, and I don't think Hal is going to be inclined to do it again.
I think the other factor is it's strategically all done in one offseason, because with each signing you have, you're giving up a lesser draft pick.
Right.
But if you were to make a signing every single year, you'd have to give up your first-round draft pick every single year, which would make no sense. So I think they want the first-round draft pick next year.
Actually, so I was doing – I did a post, I think it was last week, about the Yankees all-bust team. And I was looking at every first-round pick the Yankees have ever taken. There was a series in the 80s. I think there was only 1 year out of, like, six or something that they actually had a first-round draft pick. Steinbrenner kept signing free agents who were attached to draft picks. So the Yankees didn't have a first-round draft pick in a lot of those years in the 80s.
It would be
interesting to go back and see which players would have been available at that place in the draft.
Yeah. And of course, anyone good that they did draft, they traded away, like, you know, Jay Buhner or Fred McGriff or Jose Rio. So
that's true.
Yep.
So, I think the organizational philosophy is that if they're going to make the big signings, do it all at once. And I do not foresee them making a big signing until after the Sabathia and Teixeira contracts expire.
And A-Rods.
And A-Rods, whatever.
Yeah.
But after that's going to happen, I think they're going to do one of these spending sprees again. Because then Ellsbury's contract will be expiring in 4 years after that. So they'll like stagger. It's like every 3 or 4 years, the big contracts will be shed.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they'll only miss a first-round draft pick every 3 or 4 years.
So in terms of LTL's question, would you still say Phelps is probably the most likely of those four? Or would you say?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think so. I think Phelps will be last in the rotation, whatever space that is.
Yeah.
But I think he'll be in the rotation in some, especially if he proves himself in this. This is a very important stretch for him.
Yeah.
If he can prove that he's important, he'll stay in the rotation.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Next question from John Beck, the former Jayscape. Do you consider yourself more of a hunter or a gatherer?
Gatherer. No, I'm not a hunter.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with gatherer.
I would vote. I think so. We're all voting gatherer on this one. And my rationale is that I don't want to be like Tommy Hunter, since he's terrible. And Torrey Hunter is a good player that has very conflicting views on people to me. I disagree with him.
Yeah, I'll stick with gatherer.
Yeah, until there is a mean Bob Gatherer in the major leagues, I'm going to stick with Gatherer. Because Torrey Hunter has some weird opinions, and Tommy Hunter is terrible at pitching.
Yep.
All right, next question from Greg Kirkland. Pete O'Brien, call him up now or right now?
Yesterday.
He needs to figure out how to draw a walk. I like dingers, yeah. But
walk. Yeah. His walk percentage is like, I think it's zero this year.
Well, I think he's walked in Tampa, but he hasn't walked in like the 10 games he's been in Trenton.
So it would be nice if he had. So I think he said that I was watching a video recently about how he was working on his plate discipline. He was working on some of the mechanics of his swing. He has this hitch with his leg where he like loads. And that's the only thing that's kind of weird in his swing. So I think if he kind of quiets his mechanics down a little bit, that'll help a lot. He's not ready yet by any means, but you could see he's got a power potential that's just at least a 60 or 65 out of 80. So he's the guy I could totally see him hitting 35 home runs at the major league level. Absolutely. It's just a matter of whether his peripherals will be any good. Can he play any defense? Can he draw any walks? Can he do anything other than hit home runs?
Yeah, and I'm worried that if he doesn't figure out how to control other parts of his game, then he's just going to turn out to be like one of the many hitters who hits a ton of home runs in the minor leagues but struggles in the majors, because majors will tend to figure out your power stroke and get you to strike out a ton.
Yeah, it was weird because they were talking about certain. I think they were talking about Joey Gallo hitting 60 home runs in the minors, and then Minor League Baseball had like a Twitter thing about how there were certain players who played in the minors hit like a huge amount of home runs, and there are certain players that are capable of hitting like 30 home runs a year in the minors, and then just physically cannot do it in the majors. So if that's his only tool, I really don't know the full body of his tools, but right now all that we know is he's a one-dimensional player. He's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I love following him online, you know, but right as of now, he's a completely one-dimensional player. He has no speed. He has, you know, no – his hit tool isn't amazing. He really doesn't have a position. So there are a lot of question marks with him, but just the fact that he could jettison himself to the top 100 list for prospects sheerly on his power potential.
At the very least, he's making himself an interesting trade chip if the Yankees do want to go that route too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, including someone like that is a huge plus. I don't know how much other teams value him, but at least he's raising eyebrows. Other teams are going to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Next from Aaron Shelby Rose. Is Ellsbury falling victim to May, or is he most likely hurt? I don't think he's hurt. I think he's just in a bad slump.
Yeah, I don't think he's hurt either.
Slumps happen to everyone. Yeah. He's just in an ugly one right now. I have faith that he'll turn it around June. Maybe that last hit.
Yeah.
Hopefully the hit today.
Hopefully the
hit today will turn him around.
I think it's just a block in the road, but I don't think it's that big of a... I wouldn't make anything of it, to be honest. It's just 1 month, really.
Yeah.
Because I think he's really... Yeah. He was overplaying his own... He's really a little bit over a league average hitter with elite defense. That's his game. And he was playing much better than league average offense the first month of the season. So he was going to regress. And I think he regressed hard, but I think he'll even out to about league average, a little bit above. So I'm not at all worried.
Yeah. If he's still slumping like
yep.
the end of June, I'll be a little worried, but I don't think he will be.
Yep.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Okay, and the last question, also from Aaron Shelby Rose. How does the contract insurance clause work if CC's knee is bad enough to end his career?
Well, with his knee, it doesn't work because the contract states that the vesting option for... There's a buyout.
Isn't the vesting option based on his shoulder or something?
That's correct. There are three conditions. One, he does not end 2016 on the disabled list with a left shoulder injury. He does not spend more than 45 days on the disabled list with a left shoulder injury, or he does not make more than 6 relief appearances because of a left shoulder injury. So basically, his knee is not going to change anything, but there's a $5 million buyout. So there's a possibility that the Yankees will just buy out of the contract.
Right, but doesn't the option vest if he doesn't like get hurt via the shoulder?
Oh, yeah. So the knee wouldn't apply to that because it's not his left shoulder.
Yeah, I think the Yankees are going to be kind of stuck if he doesn't hurt his shoulder, because otherwise the option will vest anyway. They don't have the option to buy him out.
It looks like Galuli is going to get a call.
Well, I mean, the Onion reported that his knee fluid drowned a city. So.
Yeah, they're just stuck with him. There's really no way around that, and it's unfortunate. I don't know why that was in the con. He had a bout with the left shoulder injury, but
it's very odd that it was like the left shoulder and not like anything else.
It should have just been any injury. If he does, I mean, I don't know why they would just, especially with the rise of elbow injuries. I don't know why I would ever include. I guess shoulder was a more popular injury then. I feel like if they were to create this contract today, it would include elbow instead.
Yeah. Oh well.
So it's strange, yep. But the Yankees are stuck with it, and they've got, you know, $75 million left to pay. So.
Yeah, because they have like $25 million per for the next 2 years plus that option.
It's 23 next year, and then 25 for the next two.
Yeah, and the fact that he has that degenerative knee condition really is concerning, because that's not going to get better, and he's going to have to figure out how to pitch on it, and he might not be able to pitch well off it, so...
Yeah, he may just be a bad pitcher for the next 3 years, so everyone cross their fingers, or if not, batten down the hatches and just
Then we have our own Barry Zito on our hands.
Exactly, you just have to deal with bad CC, which we've dealt with, like, we've gotten through a year of it.
Yeah.
Sort of.
It's just sad because he's a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, and he may go to the Hall of Fame as a Yankee. We're not really sure, but he won a World Championship with the Yankees, and it's upsetting, but that's kind of the worst part.
Yeah, and I think he might, as you said, I think he might have a Hall of Fame case, but it may be like if he's really struggling over the last few years, that'll hurt him in the voters' eyes, because voters are...
Possibly. But... I think he will get into the Hall of Fame
at some point. Probably.
He's got the resume even on by a traditional stats standpoint. I mean, he finished in the top five in the Cy Young voting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. Second in the Rookie of the Year voting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 All Star appearances. You know, he's got all the traditional things that'll sway voters.
I do think that. Voters are going to need to make a mental adjustment concerning modern pitchers, because the way that modern starting pitchers are used is a lot different than like the traditional Hall of Fame starting pitchers. So it might take them a little while to adjust to that. So guys like CC Sabathia or Ry Halladay might be left out to dry for a little while, but we'll see.
Yeah, but I think they win, and also. They're having a problem, like the ERA is a little bit higher than what people have been used to. So it's like, oh wow, he has a career 3.63 ERA. That's so high. But it's like, no, ERA plus.
Well, yeah, because I think Mike Messina's career ERA is like not especially great, but you know he was awesome.
His FIP minus is like 84. Yeah,
and Mike Messina is.
By the time CC is eligible, and a lot of people that are like joining now will be eligible and to vote and. That'll help us chase a lot.
Yeah, most of the Sabermetrics writers will be eligible to vote by the time he's eligible for the Hall of Fame. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a conversation that we can have later, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we can move on to the next part of the podcast, which is Game I Created, and it's very simple. It's just I'm going to name two Yankees. And you have to guess who had more career home runs for the Yankees. And the totals are kind of amusing. So I have 7 player comparisons, and you guys just have to say who you think had more home runs. And you can agree, or you can disagree. It's up to you.
All right.
Okay. So first comparison, Greg Nettles or Don Mattingly, who had more career homers?
I'm going to go with Nettles.
I am too, so I feel like it's a trick.
Yeah, you're right. Greg Nettles. He had 250, and Don Mattingly had 222. Forget that Greg Nettles was a really good home run hitter, and he led the league in homers in a time when like the league leader was hitting like 35 or something that wasn't great.
He was he was also an elite defensive third baseman. Hey, Greg Nettles, if you want to play third base next year...
Yeah, he's a borderline Hall of Famer, and there are only like 10 third basemen in the Hall of Fame or something like that. So, yep. All right, so you both got that one, right? Next one, Roger Maris versus Robinson Cano.
I'm going to go with Robinson Cano.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Yep, you're right. Robinson Cano has more homers by one. 204 to 203.
Wow.
Yep. Of course, it's also pretty impressive that Maris did that, and he was only on the Yankees for like six or seven years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like a quarter of it, more than a quarter of that came in one year.
Oh, yeah,
so.
61 season.
Yeah.
All right, next one is Red Ruffing and Billy Martin.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Billy Martin.
I'm going to take Billy Martin.
Red Ruffing. The pitcher.
Oh. Oh my god.
He had 31 career homers, which is actually really great for a pitcher.
How many did Billy Martin 30. Have? Wow.
And he has his number retired. Yeah. Red Ruffing actually is second on the all-time list for most pitcher homers behind Wes Farrell. And he hit 31. I think of his, like, he hit, like, 31 homers while he was a Yankee, which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that's a comparable amount, like, other. I mean, I guess that's also a thing, like, of that period of time, like, infielders were not supposed to have a lot of home runs. Like, Ozzie Smith has 28 career home runs.
Yep.
The most he's ever had in a season were 6.
All right. So, next one, Jason Giambi and Tino Martinez.
This is as a Yankee or as, like, in a career?
As a Yankee.
Okay, I'm going to go with Giambi.
I'm going to go with Giambi, too.
Yep, that's right. Giambi had 209 homers, and Tino had 192.
Yeah, that makes sense, because Giambi had a couple of years where he hit, like, 40 home runs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, he was just knocking the cover off the ball at that beginning of his Yankee career.
Tino gets a plaque. All right. Next one, Chuck Knoblauch and Home Run Baker.
I'm going with Home Run Baker on this one.
Knoblauch?
Knoblauch is correct. Chuck Knoblauch had 49 home runs, and Home Run Baker had 48.
Wow.
They had low standards back then.
His name was Home Run, and, like, today, barely have any.
I mean, I feel like that name was given as a joke, like, kind of like when huge people are called tiny. Like, he was probably called Home Run because he couldn't hit home runs.
Well, no, the thing was, like, he could hit home runs, but the league leader back then, I mean, when he earned his nickname Home Run Baker, it was in the dead ball era, and when he was, I think he led the league with, like, 12 or something like that. And he was like, oh my goodness, it's Home Run Baker! But compared to modern day, Chuck Knoblauch had more home runs. 49 to 48. Okay. Next one, Ricky Henderson and Johnny Damon.
I'm going to go with Ricky Henderson, actually.
Yeah, so will I.
Yep, it's Ricky Henderson. Again, beats him by one, 78 to 77.
Yeah, I was conflicted on that one just because Johnny Damon had that one year where he hit like 30 home runs. I think it was in 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ricky Henderson, I think, sometimes people forget, he hit over like 300 home runs in his career, I'm pretty sure.
Yep, he did.
He also played for like forever, but you know.
Newark Bears.
Yep, he did play.
Yep, I saw him.
Twice played for the Newark Bears. All right, and the last one I have, Eduardo Nunez or Enrique Wilson?
Well, I know Eduardo Nunez has 10, so I'm going to have to go with Enrique Wilson, actually.
I'm going to go with Nunez.
The answer is Enrique Wilson.
Yes.
Enrique Wilson out-homered him 12-10.
Yes.
All right, so I'll need to get another one cause to break the tie, because you both had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 right out of the 7. Okay, so the final comparison. Fathers of two should-be Hall of Famers, Bobby Bonds and Ken Griffey Sr.
Interesting. I'm going to guess Ken Griffey Sr.
And just so we end this game, I'll go Bonds. Yeah, just so you get a result either way.
Okay, and the answer is Ken Griffey Sr. Ken Griffey Sr. had 49, and Bonds had 32. But then again, Bonds only played 1 year in the Yankees. And he went 30-30.
Oh, wow.
I think that'll do it for our game segment. Now we can move on to the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. All right, Matt P., your Yankee of the Week.
Oh, this is just an easy one. It's Tanaka. Tanaka struggled in his last start against the Cubs, but he still grinded it out, and also he had the, you know, the shutout, complete game shutout against the Mets to put his season F4 total to 1.9, which is fifth amongst pitchers. So he's pretty good at the baseball.
Pretty decent at baseball stuff. Yeah, that
sounds
right.
All right, Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
I'm going with Dellin Betances because he's striking out all the people.
That he is. I think I was just struck out by Dellin Betances.
You imagine Betances versus Soriano.
I think it would be like Chris Stewart where he struck out on two pitches.
I think Soriano would strike out twice in the same at bat.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Can't complain of that. He's dealing. All right. My Yankee of the Week is Mark Teixeira. Because he's been pretty hot and hitting some dingers, which is always comforting to see, really showing that, hey, maybe there's still life left in me after all. And my reconstructed baby wrist is still good.
And it's not actually the wrist of a child.
No. I hope he comes out with, like, a press conference where he's like, yeah, it turns out that my artificial wrist is more powerful than a baby's. And it's all thanks to Juice Press. Follow me for future comments on Sports Yapper.
Touch.
Yeah, he's a weirdo. But as long as he keeps hitting dingers, he can be as weird as he wants.
Oh, yeah, no. Tweet as much about Sports Yapper as you want. Just keep hitting dingers.
All right, Matt P., your Mitre of the Week.
My Mitre of the Week is Alfonso Soriano because he has a 25.7 K percentage. Which currently is the highest point, I think, his entire career.
Is it bad that that's lower than I expected?
Yeah, you expected at least 30, right? Yeah, no, if you were 30, you would literally be just, it would be impossible to hit. But yeah, I think it's just because it's been so high lately, but he already has 43 strikeouts in 42 games.
Fierce.
He just wanted to.
And
podcast.
Granted, last year he had 156 strikeouts in 151 games, so he's on pace to be pretty much the same as what he did last year, so.
Yeah, it's just kind of unfortunate that, you know, slumping Sori is just ice cold.
Like, he's worse than Brian Roberts when he's cold. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Matt F., your Mitre of the Week.
I don't want to do this just I like him, but Jacoby Ellsbury is just not hitting at all right now.
Yeah, it's tough, but it's deserved.
Yeah.
Contract wasted, DFA.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Cut your ties. My Mitre of the Week, oh man, if the bullpen hadn't come up with some good innings today, then it could have gone to any of, like, Claiborne, Daly, or Seves, but they all pitched well today, so now I feel bad about, like, if I was going to give it to one of them. So,
yeah.
I'm just going to have to give it to Derek Jeter, because he hasn't been hitting much lately, I don't really think.
No.
And, you know.
Yeah.
He's looking bad against righties, more so than normal. He needs to find one of those Jeter hot streaks. Maybe he'll get one coming up. It's weird thinking that maybe facing Chris Sale will be good, but Chris Sale is a lefty, so maybe he'll do something there. But
yep.
And his defense has just cost several runs lately. It's very, very obvious, and I think that...
Yeah, that's really bad.
I think, obviously, Brendan Ryan isn't going to hit, but maybe you need to give Brendan Ryan at least a day or two a week, at least when Hiroki Hirota pitches, because you need Ryan to suck up those
definitely.
Grounders that Jeter's just going to fall and he get nothing of.
Fall in the direction definitely. Of Bagley.
Yeah, it's not even like a diving Jeter, it's just past the falling Jeter at this point. So, hopefully Captain can turn it around. Do you have anything else?
I think that's it. Go Yankees with baseball, right?
What was the name of that player you tweeted? Matt F.
Cayenne Norfolk.
Well.
I first thought it was Norfolk, but then I looked harder. It's Norfolk.
Norfolk.
It's and it's also his middle name is Mikhail.
That is quite the series of names.
I am Mikhail Norfolk.
Bless him. All right.
Bless his heart.
Well, that'll do it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. You can follow me on Twitter at MearnsPSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. Matt P. at MPro6294. Follow the PSA _GIFs account too.
My favorite is still the Beltran barrel roll.
Oh, yeah, the Beltran barrel roll. We're just stumbling over. Maybe that's when he hurt himself. Oh no, my bone spur is floating around. I think it's up around my armpit now. So, you can follow those accounts. You can or find us on Facebook. We're facebook.com/pinstripealley. And can like, rate it, and review us on iTunes. It'll help increase our awareness on iTunes. Sometimes iTunes search queries will only search by who gets the most ratings and reviews. So the more ratings and reviews we have, the more exposure we'll get. And that is great, I think. I think that's everything. You can obviously go to the website at pinstripealley.com. Other than that, I think that'll just about do it for the three of us. So here's hoping the Yankees can use the good vibes from Wednesday afternoon's win in Chicago to win some more games in Chicago on the other side of town, and then beat whoever they're playing against over the weekend. Who are they playing against on the weekend?
The Cardinals.
Beat the Cardinals. Are they going to go to St. Louis for that?
Yes, they will. Okay,
so we'll get more action like Preston Claiborne bunting, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So that'll do it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast. Have a good night.